good morning, and welcome to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and Las Cruces have enacted city ordinances that boost each municipality's minimum wage above the state's required minimum. Proposed legislation is in the hands of our legislators to raise the state's minimum wage, now stalled, as is legislation that would prohibit additional cities, towns, and counties from requiring the payment of a minimum wage that is higher than the state's. Who benefits from the higher minimum wage ordinances, and who is harmed? Do the city's ordinances and the proposed legislation merely raise the minimum wage, or do they create a living wage? Joining me in the studio to discuss these issues is Dr. Melissa Binder, director of the Institute for Social Research and a professor in the Department of Economics at the University of New Mexico, and Matthew Henderson, executive director of the grassroots nonprofit organization OLE. Joining us by phone is Vince Vaccaro, the owner of Lorenzo's Italian Restaurant in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Welcome to all of you.
Hi.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for being here. To participate in our program, email us at collinshow@kunm.org or post your questions and comments online at kunm.org. Well, Vince Vaccaro, thanks for joining us this morning from Las Cruces. How long have you been a restaurant owner in Las Cruces, please?
In Las Cruces, about 21 years. I actually started in Berkeley, California back in 1983.
And how many people do you employ currently in your restaurant in Las Cruces?
Currently, I'm down to about 28 people. In the past, I'd had three restaurants here, up to about 78 people I employed.
All right. Of those 28 that you currently employ, to how many workers do you pay the minimum wage?
Basically zero. When they come on board, everybody starts at minimum wage. So basically, the new people come in and start at minimum wage, and then as their skills increase, I increase their pay.
So the city of Las Cruces passed a minimum wage ordinance in 2014. When did that ordinance go into effect, and what was the increase in the minimum?
Okay, it started this beginning of this year, January 1, and it went from $7.50 to an $8.40 minimum wage.
And when that increase happened, Vince, were there any immediate impacts to your business?
Not as far as the business itself. Any increase in the minimum wage or any changes that were going to affect an owner of a business, it's going to take a few months, 6 months to a year. Right now, we're a very resilient group, and we did have to make some changes on my side. Of course, prices unfortunately went up. Hours got cut back, and I had to adjust my hours to the restaurant.
Now, we're just a few months into that minimum wage increase, and I think you told me before the program that there will be a six-month review, but does the increase continue to impact your business, and how?
It will in long term. Immediately my payroll per month, per week, went up close to $1,000 a week. Between 900 and 1,000. And the impact will be long-term with food prices, which have already started to inch up because my suppliers' costs have gone up, and, of course, it gets passed on to me.
Now, when you go before the city council to talk about the impact of the minimum wage, what is it you will tell them?
Well, 6 months is too soon because it takes a while for things to cycle through. A lot of businesses have already cut bare bones because we've been on a 9-year downslide in Las Cruces and most of the country until recently, and we've cut back bare bones. So we're running very, very thin on the line. We've just had to take the increase and work with it and cut more bare to the bones, I guess.
Okay. Now, Dr. Melissa Binder, let's bring you into the conversation here. You've looked at, from an academic perspective, and taught classes about the minimum wage issue. Are the studies that have been done on the impact of a higher minimum wage in agreement as to the impact, whether negative or positive?
Well, I would say that over time it's evolved. It used to be that people consistently found small negative effects on employment. And in the last 10 years or so, there's been a different kind of research, which is looking at, because there have been so many local initiatives, looking at adjacent areas, which is arguably a better control. And what those studies found, for the most part, was no effect, and it was quite surprising. Because theoretically, you would think that if the price of something goes up, people will buy less of it. So firms would buy less labor. So it's been kind of puzzling from the perspective of economics that you've really seen, I would say, a consensus among most of the studies that there is no effect on employment.
But if we look hard enough, obviously we can find people who will find negative effects. I know I did in preparing for the show, and I'm sure as we go on we can talk about some of them. But those people are in the minority at this point?
Yeah, I would say that if you look at I told you before the program, there was a study that really influenced my thinking on this. And it was a study that tried to reconcile the differences. So you typically find if you're looking at two communities close to each other, one enacts a minimum wage, the other does not, you don't see an impact. But when you look nationwide, you know, for example, comparing states with different minimum wages, you do see a small negative effect on employment. And this study was able to reconcile those two, and they found that labor markets in different parts of the country are quite different. And if you control for that difference, in other words, if you say, okay, I'm just going to look within a region, within a place where the labor markets are more similar, you don't see an effect. And so I think it's reasonable. Like that, to me, that was a very convincing study. Actually, it might have been 10 years ago, I wrote an op-ed with my colleague, Kate Krause, about the minimum wage. And my thinking at that time was, okay, yeah, there's a small negative effect on employment. But since that time, the research has really shown otherwise, I would say.
Now, we've heard from Vince Vaccaro down there in Las Cruces about the impact upon him and his business following the increase in the minimum wage in Las Cruces. What would you say to him about what studies have shown regarding the long-term impact of an increased minimum wage? He's talked about some short-term impacts, and it's really soon at this point. But what would you say to him?
Well, I would say that it's very confusing. It's very puzzling because I've talked to business owners, and there's no question that they have to adjust, that prices – there aren't that many studies that show what happens to prices, but there is one study that shows that they go up a little bit, like 9% or something, just within the industries that are particularly affected, like restaurants. And I would say that businesses are somehow able to adjust without actually cutting employment. Like as Vin said, he feels like he's going to cut back on hours. And there is some evidence that hours are cut a little bit. But overall, what the studies show is that earnings of minimum wage workers go up.
You know, Vince, and I think you told me before the program, I don't know if you mentioned it here, the percentage increase in your prices that happened as a result of the increase.
Yes, my increase was very minimal because what Melissa had said, you do have to watch some things. Price points very big in Las Cruces. You can't price yourself out of the market. So it's only a 5% increase. And I will agree with Melissa on the fact that from an employment standpoint, I want to give the people that are paying 5% more, I want to give them the quality of service. So we really don't cut the employment back as much. A place like McDonald's, though, may have a problem because I'm hearing they're going to the touch screens and they're going to lose three people up front and have one person watching as opposed to having four people taking the orders. That's where that could impact in that area.
I'm talking with Dr. Melissa Binder. She's the director of the Institute for Social Research and a professor in the Department of Economics at the University of New Mexico. I'm also talking with Vince Vaccaro, the owner of Lorenzo's Italian Restaurant in Las Cruces, New Mexico. I'm about to talk with Matthew Henderson, the executive director of the grassroots nonprofit organization OLE. And we're talking about the minimum wage issue today. You can post comments and questions for our panel on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or on Twitter at KUNM News. Well, Matthew, let's bring you into the conversation here. You're the executive director of the grassroots nonprofit OLE. Tell us a bit about your organization's mission and work, please, in the community.
Well, OLE is an organization of working New Mexicans, and we basically work on any issue that really empowers and enriches working New Mexicans. So we do a lot of work around it, expanding access to high-quality early education. And back in 2012, we led the effort that increased the minimum wage in Albuquerque.
Why was that an important issue for your organization?
Well, at that time, the minimum wage had not seen an increase in New Mexico in 5 years. And, you know, we're talking about 140,000 people in New Mexico working at minimum wage, earning $260 a week. Most of these are adults. Most of them have children, or about half have children. So it's really a huge problem to be having this huge sector of families living in poverty, even though they're working in full time. And Lott felt it was very important to change that.
Well, now, unlike Las Cruces, we've had almost, 2 years plus to look at the impacts of the increase in the minimum wage here in Albuquerque. What have you observed in the community in terms of impact since the passage of the minimum wage ordinance here in Albuquerque?
Well, the minimum wage still isn't enough, but every worker I talked to that saw a raise is grateful for it. You know, particularly when you talk to waiters, a lot of them single moms with a couple of kids whose wage went from $2.13 up to a little over $5 now. That's a pretty significant increase, and it has made all the difference for them.
Now, is Ole involved, as you said, in the statewide efforts to raise the minimum wage?
Yeah, we were involved in the legislation a couple of years ago that would have raised the minimum wage $1 that Governor Martinez vetoed, and we've been involved in every effort ever since.
So this year, with things either stalled or died in committees, What is your community doing? Are you organizing to try to say, hey, we need to get this moving? Or,
yeah, well, we want the community, first of all, to know that there were a lot of legislators that supported tabling minimum wage increases. I think that's important to know that there are folks in the legislature that aren't supportive of that. And my guess is that we're going to see more local increases as a result.
We're discussing the minimum wage today. I'm joined by Vince Vaccaro, the owner of Lorenzo's Italian Restaurant in Las Cruces, New Mexico. He joins us by telephone. I'm also joined by Dr. Melissa Binder from the University of New Mexico and Matthew Henderson, executive director of the grassroots nonprofit organization Olé. Join the conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866. Share with us. Are you a business owner or a worker who has been impacted by an increase in the minimum wage? How? We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back with you after this short break.
4770 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast in Albuquerque offers fresh fruit bouquets and chocolate-dipped fruit for any occasion. EdibleArrangements.com or 505-888-0100. Edible Arrangements is a valued supporter of KUNM.
Getting a tax refund? If you itemize deductions next year, it could be larger. Donate that unwanted vehicle and get a substantial tax deduction. We take cars, trucks, boats, motorcycles, RVs, farm equipment, basically anything with an engine, running or not. We tow it away and take care of all the paperwork, including a letter for when you file your 2015 taxes. To help KUNM and help yourself at tax time, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
I called him the Candyman.
Staffers knew what a VA doctor was up to, but no one was listening.
I said that your own chief of psychiatry hands out narcotics like they're candy. And the director, sat back in his chair and, laughed.
Next time on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about the raising the minimum wage. And I'm joined by Dr. Melissa Binder of the University of New Mexico, Matthew Henderson, the executive director of Olé, and Vince Vaccaro, the owner of Lorenzo's Italian Restaurant. And Vince, I want to come back to you because when you and I talked in preparation for the show today, you mentioned some of the effects, the negative effects that you were either experiencing or were anticipating experience. So let's talk a little bit about some of those in terms of the employees and how it impacts you as well. What are some of those negative effects?
Okay. Well, first of all, I do want to say, though, the Olay group and the cafe group we have down here, I know they were looking to do something better for the people that are working at minimum wage. And, you know, I'm behind something like that. I want people to earn as much money as they can, and the key word is earn. What I'm experiencing is a blanket increase for employees. And what that does to them, and I'm real concerned about my employees, it doesn't, and maybe Dr. Bender can help me on this one, it doesn't really increase their buying power at all. It may, in dollar-wise, look like we're putting more money into the economy, but what's happening is everything else price-wise is inching up. My minimum wage worker, if I had one that increased 90 cents and worked 40 hours a week, is a net $24 a week increase that cost me $44 to get them that 24. My wait staff, a negative effect on them is they've all been getting less tips because people are saying, well, you're earning more money per hour. Why should I tip you more? And that's something that my staff has come up to me and said, yeah, here's an effect right here. We're not real happy with this.
All right. Melissa, let's have a little conversation between you and Vince here, because those are interesting numbers that he put out about it. The increase in the wages versus the increase in the cost to him and no increase in buying power potentially.
Well, that's I would say that I would disagree a little bit on that point. So the prices that are going to be affected are mostly in the industries that hire a lot of minimum wage workers, so particularly in restaurant and food service. And those are typically small, and they're a small part of a typical worker's budget. And so on net, what the studies, the way that I read the literature, and certainly the general finding, is that wages do go up for minimum wage workers, as you would expect, and their earnings also go up. So, I think that there's always a difference between anecdotal, you know, like, oh, this is what happened to me, and when we stand back and look at the statistics overall.
Well, yeah, I can say that, but you know, the thing is, I live this 12 to 16 hours, 17 hours a day, and I see it coming down the line in food prices, and you know, I didn't just raise anybody that's on minimum wage. All my employees got a wage increase because you have to, so their buying power stays the same. When my costs go up, electricity, rent, food, you know, my cost goes up, and when you're making a little bit more across the board as opposed to working harder and getting an increase over somebody else, I really do see that as not coming in and then giving you more money on a percentage-wise basis to buy items.
Well, I mean, I think you'd have to look at what's the percentage increase in your earnings and then what's inflation. And inflation, you know, over the last couple of years has been typically under 3%. So just on the numbers, if you're going to bring in more than 3%, then you're probably doing pretty well. I think another point that's important to think about is that the minimum wage loses value as soon as it's set because of inflation.
Exactly.
And so what that means is that, as Matt was saying, that when there's a minimum wage set and then it doesn't get raised and it becomes a norm, so that's what businesses pay, that's what people are willing to accept because they're like, okay, that's the minimum. But that immediately erodes their purchasing power. And so, I think that in terms of Vince, I don't know how you feel about this, but I know that there are business owners who feel like what's hard is that it's unpredictable. You're going along, and then all of a sudden, it gets raised. And it might be a better policy if the minimum wage was tied to the cost of living.
Mm-hmm. I could agree. I have always had one question, and the question I've thrown out to our city council and other groups that I want to raise minimum wage, if it works, how come we have to keep increasing it? Why can't we have a minimum? I mean, Switzerland doesn't even have a minimum wage, and they voted down by 76% to initiate one. It's kind of an open, free market. If it works so well, why do we have to keep raising it? I know there are some other factors, but isn't minimum wage contributing to the inflation of raising prices?
Well, I would say that it's that not so much. I mean, it's the number of workers or the percentage of workers in the entire labor force that earn the minimum is relatively low, like under 10%. And so just the way the math works out, that's not going to be the driver behind inflation. And also, actually, I think that the reason why you need a minimum and why many, maybe most, and I would say probably most labor economists support a minimum is that the market is not perfect. And so just like I was saying, when you set the minimum, it sets a norm. And so businesses are like, okay, that's what it is. And workers are like, okay, I guess that's what it is. And so what you can have is that without a minimum, okay, so so the idea of economics is that there's perfect competition. Everyone knows what the going rate is, and so that's what – there's only one price. In fact, people don't have perfect information. They don't know, you know, what their the value of their labor is. And so you can have people being exploited. You know, you can have some people say, oh, yeah, okay, I'll work for $6 an hour. But the going rate is really $7, and they don't know. And so by setting a minimum wage that's relatively close to what people are paying already – and as you were saying, your workers are earning over the minimum wage. It actually makes it more efficient because that means that workers aren't going to be paid less than what the going rate is.
All right. Let me go ahead and bring in our caller, John, here from Albuquerque, who may be able to fit perfectly into this discussion. Good morning, John. Welcome.
Good morning. You know, minimum wage workers make up a very small percentage, but the next, you know, meaningful percentage is everybody above them. And there's this thing called wage compression. And people are smart. I think that the economist is assuming that people are, you know, not as smart as they are. And I can tell you that they're very smart, and they know exactly what minimum wage is. And they know damn well that certain industries get paid. And when somebody shows up at my door in my business and they can't read or write, and they can't write their name, I'm legally obligated to pay them a minimum wage. Or to the business owner, I derive no value because they have no skills. Which means that somebody who does come into my office with some skills, but not meaningful skills that are meaningful to my work that I could maybe train them, they're going to want more than minimum wage. Because they're more than just the minimum common denominator. And so you have this wage compression all the way up the ladder, and at some point, the minimum wage gets consumed, and... you know, the pegging to inflation would just encourage more inflation. You know, the market needs to set forth its own, you know, guidelines. I think the minimum wage is not a bad thing, don't get me wrong. But to say that there is not an overall long-term effect by raising the minimum wage, I don't buy it because I live it and see it every day. Well, I have an MBA and I've seen it in economics and everything else. It has wage compression. I just can't imagine how that does not happen.
Okay. John, I want to ask you a question. Are you a business owner?
I am a business owner, and I've been a business owner since 1996.
And you're talking about wage compression, and we may need to talk a little bit about what that is. But that's one of the – when I looked at studies, that's one of the negatives that people cite. But one of the positives that people cite is this sort of increase in efficiency and workers feeling better about themselves and doing a better job that sort of counteracts that. But are you saying the wage compression for that level of workers above entry level, all those positive effects are negated because they feel like, hey, how come my skills are better? How come I'm not getting a better wage?
Well, you have to think about wage compression, and then you have to think about and get in the head of a 16-year-old kid. And a 16-year-old kid is in high school, and he's thinking, wow, they just raised the minimum wage. Why do I need to get my high school diploma? It puts a damper on people's desires to become smarter and more able within their communities. And so that compresses from the bottom end while you have compression at the top end. And economists never talk about that. We talk about we're a community of education, knowledge, and skills, but yet we have a wage system that is driven by laws that doesn't recognize skills and knowledge nor reward it.
All right. Well, John, thank you for your call today. Let's move right to our next caller. It's Robin, I believe. Robin, thanks for joining us today. Robin, are you with us?
Yes. Hello.
Hi, Robin. No, thanks for joining our conversation.
Yes, thanks. It's an interesting topic. I own a business in Santa Fe. I have about 14 employees, and I moved here from a state where we didn't have to pay sales tax, so that's a difficult, that's a struggle for my business. But with my employees making the heightened minimum wage, I see it as a benefit in so many reasons. I want my people to work for me for years and years and years. I want them to see working with in my business as a team. And when they're able to drive a reliable car and they are living in a home where they feel secure and they can have a family and take a vacation, it's huge for them. And I will tell you, though, that I am quick to remind them that they are the highest, among some of the highest minimum wage people in the country, and that I expect a lot out of them for that. And I feel like it gives me legitimate leverage and better relations, just better overall relationship and a better quality of people who can make a living. It's this turnover, the idea of turnover, when people aren't able to make a living, is so much more expensive for me than paying a great employee a little more money.
All right, Barbara, thanks so much for calling us today and expressing your perspective as a business owner. Matthew Henderson, you wanted to comment a little bit back, so please enter this conversation if you would.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to comment that on some of the direction that the conversation was going in. It seems like we've gotten to a place in this call-in show today and in society in general where we're trying to justify paying workers a poverty wage and say that they don't earn it, they're not smart. But the fact of the matter is, how can we really justify paying someone a wage that mires their family deep in poverty if, you know, they're busting their butts 40 hours a day, sometimes more, going to multiple jobs because that's what they have to do to support their family?
Well, that don't other taxpayers subsidize then those people if their employers are paying them a too low a wage and they can't live on it?
Not in New Mexico, they don't. I mean, our governor has created a system that makes it very, very difficult to get Medicaid, to get a child care contract. The system here has become increasingly punitive and challenging, and I believe the vast majority of workers who are entitled to some of these benefits are not getting them, in some cases not even trying to get them.
All right. Well, I'm going to read an online comment from Julia. Julia says, choosing to pay minimum wage means you have no control over your wages. They will change. Choosing to pay a fair wage, higher than the minimum wage, gives me control over my payroll. Vince, as a business owner, would you agree with Julia's statement?
I would. I would completely. I base what my people get paid on and by their work performance. And yes, I believe totally in the minimum wage should help bring people in. What she gave, and Barbara's phone call was alluding to the fact that she wants the team, she wants it to happen, she wants people to make money. The real way you get buying power is education and working hard. If you're working hard for a job and your boss does not give you the raise, if you're that good of a worker, which I hope you are, you can shop yourself around or get the raise or educate yourself. There is a group of people that need help, and I enjoy helping these people through the government, through things that I've done in the community, to get them to learn to do the job better.
All right, let's take another caller. Let's bring in Chris from Albuquerque. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. For years, I worked in Montana on local living wage ordinances and the statewide minimum wage, and we heard the same tired old arguments, usually from restaurant owners, based on theory, like John, the restaurant or business owner that called in, or conjecture about what might happen. And none of the negative effects happened in Montana, either with local living wage ordinances, which usually weren't high enough to have a major effect on the local economy, but also the statewide minimum wage has not, businesses have not closed, it has had almost a zero effect on labor, on unemployment, and that's been the effect worldwide, too. And I would just like to really emphasize that when people talk about educational workers or compare an illiterate worker to one who can't, it's just obfuscation. They're not really talking about anything real, and they're not talking about reality. All the economic studies, all the social science studies point that wages, higher wages, do not have a negative effect. They simply do not. The year I was born is 1968, and the living minimum wage in 1968, adjusted for today's dollar, is higher than it is now.
Mm. Except in Santa Fe.
Except in Santa Fe and
where it's about what it was in 1968.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your call today, Chris. And let's get into this, because one of the pieces of legislation up in the Roundhouse is a preemption bill that would prohibit any municipality, so county, city, or state, that hasn't already passed a higher minimum wage ordinance as of, I believe, January 1st, 2015, from raising up their wage. They'd have to default to the state's minimum wage. And this is a bill that business owners are pushing for. They say that the Vince, we're talking more about business owners who have businesses in multiple communities, who say that the patchwork sort of framework of wages shifting from community to community is onerous to them and a task. So Matthew, you want to jump in on that piece of legislation, please?
Sure. I think to really understand the real motivation for Representative Nate Gentry's preemption bill is to look at what else is happening in the legislature. They want to preempt increases locally while not actually increasing the minimum wage statewide. So this is really just an effort to suppress minimum wage increases. You know, it'd be one thing if the state were increasing the minimum wage to 10-10 and then preempting local ordinances, but that's not what's going on here. They're trying to preempt increases locally while not actually raising the state minimum wage.
Is this a valid argument for businesses, Dr. Melissa Bender, that it's so onerous for them to go patchwork community to community?
I really don't know.
Yeah, and not being a business owner. Well, let me give out our numbers again. Join our conversation. We're at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. Or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. I want to read an online comment. Business owners, we pay above the minimum wage because we want to retain employees. We pay paid vacations and paid holidays. The challenge we have is unemployment tax. That went up for us from 2% to over 6%. These are some of the other challenges for business owners, are they not?
Yeah, well, I would say that business owners, they are dealing always with a changing environment. And some of it is market, and some of it comes from the government. And the market, I think business owners know they can't, you know, they can't like say, hey, energy prices are too high. There's no one to complain to. I think it makes perfect sense for businesses to try to protect themselves against things that are going to raise their costs. But of course, that has to be weighed against the general good. And so I think the minimum wage is a really interesting policy. Because unlike many policies where you find that the population is pretty evenly divided, there's overwhelming support for minimum wage. And part of that, you know, may be that it's not – most of the people aren't business owners, so they're not the ones that are going to bear the brunt. And at the beginning of your talk, you were asking, like, who benefits and who gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you could certainly say that businesses suffer. I mean, it's going to be harder for them. Any cost that goes up is going to be a juggling act for them. But when we talk about policy, it's everybody. And so you have to sort of weigh, you know, okay, so this person loses a little bit, this person gains. And, you know, Vince, I don't know if you see it that way, but it seems to me that there are winners and losers in this, in any policy.
Oh, I think what you just said is 99.9% true. I mean, I agree with that wholeheartedly. What bothers me is like the phone call like Chris had. He says that, you know, there's no effect, and worldwide there was no effect, and businesses don't close. Well, behind that, the business storefront, you know, I'm making 32% less starting this year than I did last year just by the numbers. And that's what people don't see. I've been doing this 32 years. I'm not going to throw up my hands and say, man, I can't make any money. I'm out of here. You know, there's a lot of businesses that go under behind the scenes that people don't know. And Chris cited studies, and studies are important. But like I said, I live this every day. I see what's going on. And the minimum wage since 1968, it's not a straight line thing. There's a lot of things that affect minimum wage. If you took it on a straight line from 1968, minimum wage would be $22, and my pizzas would probably be selling for about $46 to make it. So there's a lot of factors, and people just they don't look beyond the storefront, what's going on behind the scenes.
We're talking today about the minimum wage and raising the minimum wage. I'm joined by Dr. Melissa Binder, director of the Institute for Social Research and a professor in the Department of Economics at the University of New Mexico, talking also with Matthew Henderson, executive director of the grassroots nonprofit organization Olé, and Vince Vaccaro, the owner of Lorenzo's Italian Restaurant in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Join our conversation at 277-5866 or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866. We'll be back with your calls and comments after this short break.
Do you appreciate folk art from around the world? Then watch your mail for several chances to win beautiful textiles donated by the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market. If you've never donated to KUNM before, you won't receive a mailing, but you can still donate and register for 13 chances to win at KUNM.org. Click Support KUNM at the top of the homepage, return your mailing, or go online today because the first three winners will be drawn before the Spring Pledge Drive.
This week in This American Life, Melanie went to high school in the Bronx, and her whole class was invited to be part of an exchange program. Her teacher basically took these public school kids to visit one of New York's fanciest private schools, just 7 miles away. But Melanie's teacher says that when they got there, Melanie could not believe what she saw.
We have to get out of here. She wouldn't say anything more. Gotta get out of here. Gotta get out of here.
What happens once you see just how much greener the grass is? This week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo. And let's go right to our caller here, one of our state representatives, Representative Martinez, calling from Santa Fe. Good morning, Representative.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me, and thanks for this show and this topic. It's certainly an important one.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. And what would you like to speak to today?
Well, I just want to congratulate your guest, all of them. You know, I think they bring a good perspective and a good debate to this issue. Now, I want to get back to something that Mr. Henderson mentioned earlier. Many times the conversation turns into sort of some sort of, we're trying to legitimize paying workers less. You know, the fact is that if you work full-time, and many people work more than full-time, you shouldn't live in poverty. And the problem is that when we are paying people poverty wages and they cannot make ends meet, it then strains our safety net, a safety net that is increasingly being cut because of austerity measures, not only at the local, state, but also at the federal level. So, for taxpayers out there, whenever workers are not earning a living wage, we are then subsidizing, the Walmarts of the world, if you would. Now, here's something else I'd like to point out. I don't disagree with Vince, and some of his concerns, but I can tell you, being here in the legislature, there are tons of other policies that we should be enacting to help small businesses, and that would help small businesses a lot more than keeping wages down. I can tell you, as a member of Ways and Means Committee, and studying the tax code is inherently unfair to small business owners. I'm working with a bipartisan group of legislators to try and shore up our tax code to ensure that it makes our small businesses more competitive. But keeping wages low the way they've been for far too long is not an answer. It's a detriment to our society and to our economy. Thanks for the show, and I look forward to continuing this debate in the years to come.
Representative Martinez, if you have a minute, we can see when we look on the legislative website that the employee preference or right to work bills that contained a higher minimum wage, those are now stuck in Senate committees, and the bills that came from the Senate raising the minimum wage are now stuck in House committees. As a legislator up there, what are your feelings about the chances for any of that legislation to move forward?
Well, look, the right to work bill when it went out of the House, it's an unconstitutional bill. It was locked, rolled. The minimum wage should have never been tied to it. In fact, the Republicans who sponsored it even enacted a floor amendment, essentially giving themselves a way out in the case that a court overturns the law because of the law growth. Having said that, it is disappointing that the true minimum wage and living wage initiatives that have been put forth by my colleagues have essentially just died in committee because of the inability and inaction of our legislature to move on those things. We shouldn't be talking about how to keep wages low. We need to be trying to figure out how to enact the living wage. It benefits not only the worker, but it benefits the business owners ultimately at the end of the day.
All right. Well, Representative Martinez, thanks for joining us from Santa Fe, and best of luck to you in the waning days of the session. Let me go ahead and read an email comment from Maureen. Employers who've called in are the good ones. Other employers are more worried about their bottom line, and needy people will work for below the minimum wage if that is their only alternative. And so I just throw that out there. And let's go ahead to our next call. I want to say it's Angel. It could be Angel, and I apologize for whichever way is wrong. Thank you for joining our conversation.
Hello. Hi. It's Angel.
Hi, Angel.
And I wanted to comment on the time for the workers. Time is valuable for workers, whether you're plumbing a toilet or scrubbing it, or you're preparing a contract for someone. That time is valuable, and it should be paid and reciprocated with at least enough to meet basic survival needs. And my second point is, I would like to flip this issue of qualification on businesses. If a business owner is unable to manage their business efficiently enough to pay a worker adequately for their time to meet the needs of their basic survival, then maybe we should be looking at the qualification of the business owners. You talk about the patchwork legislation in the state with the minimum wage. If you're at a point where you're considering expanding your business and you're not able to meet this challenge, then, you know, maybe that is a point where you need to educate yourself further in order to do that.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning, Angel. And Matthew, what do you think of that last point that Angel made? Let's look at the business owner's qualifications if they're not able to pay employees a living wage.
Well, I think Representative Martinez really sort of said it best. I mean, I think people sort of obsess about the minimum wage when it comes to small business issues. But the fact of the matter is there are tons of ways that small businesses could be helped. And our government really isn't doing what should be done to help them. It's more geared towards helping corporate interests, which really puts small businesses at a disadvantage.
All right. And Dr. Binder, how do you want to – we've heard a lot from callers and comments. And what's on your mind at this point that you want to get across to listeners, please?
Well, I think the question – I've heard a couple of people, including the – or everyone, maybe the business owners, saying that they think that there is a place for having a minimum. And I just want to just throw out like what the – like if the minimum had kept up with inflation since 1968, it would be – the national minimum would be $10.68 now. And so I think that's something to think about. Like you do need a minimum so that workers do know what the – you know, what they're entitled to. And I think the real question is, well, where should it be? And I would say that a proposal that I think – it's amazing to me how this comes up every 5 or 10 years. It's here again. And when I was just starting out as a labor economist, I'm like, okay, well, we'll figure this out and then we'll know the answer. And it's like, really, again and again and again. And one way to just take this off and maybe focus on other things, as Matt was saying, would be if it was tied to the cost of living, to inflation, in which case it would just go up a little bit every year. I think that would be easier for businesses, and it would make sure that workers retain their purchasing power.
Isn't that the way the Santa Fe ordinance is?
It is, but very few are, and the national is not.
Right, yeah. And I think
the Albuquerque as well.
I think some of the proposals up at the Roundhouse are also tied to cost of living as
right.
well.
And I would say just in terms of not having this conversation over and over again, that would be a good thing.
That would save a lot of energy that could be put to other things. Let's talk a little bit about living wage, because we've heard that mentioned as well. And I want to stay with you, Dr. Binder, for a second, because when economists study minimum wage, do they also look at living wage? What and whether the minimum wage suffices to pay someone enough so that they can live on it, so we, the other taxpayers, are not subsidizing people.
So that's not – that would be a – like usually the way that the minimum wage is studied is as a policy, just sort of like, okay, here it is. it would be a separate inquiry to say, well, is it enough? And that's really a different question. I think that from an economist's point of view, or in terms of the labor market, what you're really looking at is what's the minimum wage relative to the average wage. And so, you know, I think that Vince had said, well, you know, could it be $20? What would that do? And I think that there's definitely a point at which you could set a minimum that was too high. If you set the minimum to be $25 an hour, that probably wouldn't work. In 1968, the minimum wage was about half of the average hourly wage. And right now, the average hourly wage is about $20. And so looking at that, that's probably a minimum wage that's reasonable, $10 an hour. Well, there's something else I wanted to say.
Well, let me get to a caller, and then we'll get back to you. Let's bring in Chad from Santa Fe. Good morning, Chad.
Good morning. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely.
And I just wanted to comment on there's been a lot of talk about what employees can do to be more competitive and more attractive in the labor market to earn their spot. But there hasn't been much talk about what employers can do from a business standpoint to be more competitive, things like improved accounting practices, things that earn their place within various markets they operate in, and to afford these changes. I was wondering if your guests could comment on that.
All right, let's ask Vince. Vince, and thank you, Chad, for your call. Vince, when this came up and you knew you had to face an increasing minimum wage, did you look at your internal practices for efficiency to see how you might improve them?
Any good owner does that continually. And like I had mentioned before, we're already bare bones. We've survived a 9-year downturn. There is just not much else you can do. You know, it sounds easy, adjust your accounting practices. Well, that doesn't pay the bills. The last caller, Angel, has mentioned, well, what's the owner got to put into this? Well, you know, I lose my business. I've lost my house. I've lost 32 years of work put into it. 28 people lose their jobs. There's a lot that goes on the line. And when somebody tells me you have to pay this as a minimum to a person that doesn't know how to walk and chew gum at the same time, That's not what helps my business. You've got to have people that work hard. And, you know, I've had people making $15, $16 an hour because they've earned it, and it's a mutual benefit. You know, business owners are on the hook here, and there are a lot of people that have told me if it goes to $9, they're gone, and everything in their life is gone. There's a lot on the line. And like I've said three times, we live this every day. It's not a simple mathematical calculation or change. When the representative called in, I think that would be great if we got some sort of tax breaks. My taxes went up. My workman's comp went up with minimum wage going up. I am not against people making money. I'm for mutual benefits. And how much do you pay a person? You pay them what they're worth.
Now, let me go ahead and give the numbers out one last time, 277-5866 locally or toll-free 1-877-899-5866. I believe we have, you know, a lot of different links to information on our call-in show webpage, and one of them is a white paper from the Santa Fe Chamber of Commerce. And if you're interested, you can look there. And there are some stories about businesses that did close in Santa Fe. And can we prove that it was because of an increase in minimum wage? I don't know. But you, certainly they're out there for people to look at. One thing, we're sitting here at the university, and one thing I want to bring up is there are frequently arguments that students in particular are going to lose out on minimum wage jobs when the minimum wage is increased, because those jobs are going to be given to other people, perhaps more skilled or perhaps people who have families. Matthew, what's the impact upon students that you've seen in the community?
Yeah, we haven't heard any complaints of that type whatsoever. And, you know, I think Melissa could speak to it further. I think there is plenty of studies that have been done that just shows this doesn't create unemployment among teenagers. But, you know, I think it all again comes back to the fact that, you know, there are a lot of people out there who earn a lot more than what they get paid.
And let's go back.
Yeah. just because you earn it doesn't mean you're getting paid it. And that's what minimum wage increases are really trying to correct. Because the fact of the matter is, some folks like Vince sort of reference workers who can't chew gum and walk at the same time. The fact of the matter is that there are a lot of very efficient, hardworking folks out there who aren't getting paid for the amount of work they put into a business.
Then they should move to another job, Matthew. I mean, improve yourself. If you're that good, move forward. Because I have people I pay that don't work.
Well, sure. By the same token, I could argue, Vince, that you shouldn't be hiring people who can't chew gum and walk at the same time.
No, I don't. But you know, some of my best employees, I spent months training them. They've been with me 12 years. You know, but you don't know that until you hire them. You work with them. If it doesn't work, you fire them. Then you have to pay unemployment. But, you know, you don't know. You got to give people a chance. And I don't discriminate even now with the higher minimum wage. I hire college kids, a lot of high school kids to help them out. But it goes both ways. I mean, there has to be something reasonable where it's a back and forth. It just can't be, I'm giving you this because I'm legislated to do that. I will give you more if you earn it for yourself and for me.
All right, let's go ahead and bring in Barbara, who's probably our last caller for the day. Barbara from Albuquerque, tell us what you'd like to talk about, please.
Yes, I'd like, it's really important for people to know that they can be successful in the world, and there are a lot of ways to gain that success, and that people are not owed a certain amount of money just because they need it. They do have to have the skills and ability and develop those continually in order to be paid a higher and higher wage throughout their lives. I do believe that a minimum wage is important, but I'm not thinking it should be like $15 an hour. I'm an arborist. I take care of trees, and in the landscaping business, $15 an hour, you really have to earn it. And so that's what I have to say. And mainly just to encourage people to know that they can be successful and can get good jobs, and there are ways to do that.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Barbara. And it sounds like you were echoing what Vince had to say. Dr. Bender, you want to respond at all? Matthew, you? No, nobody wants to respond to Barbara's call.
I will.
Yes, go ahead.
So I think what you said about the $15, I think that's really where the debate is. Where do we set it? And I think that's really what this conversation is about. You know, what's the right wage? And you were asking, well, is there a particular living wage that, you know, that there should be? I think that's a good question. And I think that, you know, that's something that we, you know, as a society maybe want to think about. And clearly, if you maintain the purchasing power of people over time, that's probably a good thing.
Well, as you can hear, our music is playing underneath. Matthew, any just closing words for people with regard to this legislative session?
Hard work deserves fair pay. I think that's what it all boils down to.
All right. Well, thanks to our guest, Vince Vaccaro, owner of Lorenzo's Italian Restaurant in Las Cruces, UNM Economics Professor Dr. Melissa Bender, and Olé Executive Director Matthew Henderson for an engaging conversation. Thanks to you all. You can find a podcast of this and other KUNM call-in shows online at KUNM.org. Roman Garcia engineered the show today. Kaveh Movahed handled our phones. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This is the KUNM Call-In Show on 89.9 KUNM, broadcasting live from the University of New Mexico.